Hey guys, before we get into this show, I wanted to let the listeners know that this audio is a little bit sketchy at times. This is not the product that we like to put out on the Tradecast, but sometimes we get through an audio recording and the content was amazing, but the quality was not. So this is one of those instances where I'm not particularly proud of the quality of the actual audio on it, but the audio or the quality of the content in the podcast is too good to pass up. So with that being said, kind of make your own decision. Is this something you're going to listen to? Like I said, the content is fantastic. You'll enjoy Jacob Brickroad and Ryan McDowell. So enjoy the show if you want to. And if you want to bail out now, I totally get it. So enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast podcast here on RotoViz Radio. I say this every time that I open up the show, but as always, I am not Eric Bertzlaff. He had some issues with his kid earlier today, so had to step away from the show for a little bit. Dan is meeting with Roger Goodell as I speak, so that's happening. So that's a fun little tidbit for the Tradecast crew. And tonight, I am joined by fellow RotoViz contributor, Jacob, I'm not sure, are you still on the RotoViz flagship, or are you on and off of that one?
Yeah, I took a hiatus from the RotoViz radio podcast with Pat Crane, and Sean Siegel filled in for me, so don't think I'm going to get that spot back.
Yes, you might have gotten Wally Pipped there for sure.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
Yep. So I am joined by Jacob Brickroad, one of the great guys over at RotoViz. And I'm also joined by frequent contributor to the Dynasty Tradecast and writer for RotoWorld, DLF, pretty much anywhere that there's fantasy content. Ryan McDowell is doing it. And we're joined by Ryan McDowell. How are you doing tonight this evening?
I'm doing well. I think I've actually been on the Tradecast maybe more than Eric. I think that's right.
We'll have to crunch the numbers on that one, but you haven't edited any of the podcasts and Eric has, so at least he has that going for him.
That's true, and I won't.
That is true. I will have to leave that to your wife if that ever came down to it. All right. As we get rolling into the show, I want to let you know that listeners to the Dynasty Tradecast can get a 30% discount to the RotoViz NFL Game Pass through the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content and also supports the pod. And you get contacted us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, as well as on Twitter, @rotovizradio. So I brought these two gentlemen on tonight to talk a little bit of Dynasty startup strategy. Obviously, this is the beginning of the offseason. The Patriots pretty much already won the Super Bowl. So let's talk about some Dynasty startups, the things that happen, you know, February, March, April. It's startup season. And we're not necessarily going to be talking about the best, like, values and startups right now. That's can be a conversation for another day. We're going to talk about more general Dynasty philosophy, startup philosophy, and how we go about doing things. So we will kick things off with just early round strategy. Jacob, you know you have – let's just say you have a startup coming up. What are you thinking about in the early rounds?
Well, I've been playing this game for almost 20 years now, and it's maybe kind of a historian of the game, if you will. And from my research, and I've written a couple articles that actually got published in RotoWorld. I got one called Dynasty Hit Rates that if you Google that, and RotoWorld Cup, and then another one called Chasing the Top 24 Wide Receivers. And I just throw those out there because I'm going to reference them a few times. And from my research, you know, going almost 20 years now, it's a lot of the same players end up in those top scoring spots year after year. A lot of the same offenses, a lot of the same quarterbacks are tied to those players. And so when I'm doing a startup, I want to take as many of those players early in a startup draft. And I go zero rookie. And I know that's it could be contrarian in some circles. Usually a running back doesn't need to draft running backs. So I'll still draft runners. I just won't take any early. And that means that I'm probably going to miss on there's Amari Cooper or this year's Mike Evans, but I'm also going to not get hammered by this year's Kevin White or Cordarrelle Patterson or Monte Ball, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of strategy going in is I want to get as many of those proven players as I can age, you know, as long as they're in their mid to late 20s. And sometimes I like trading back and getting as many picks as I can in those, you know, second to fourth, fifth rounds, if possible. What do you think about that? I know that's kind of a contrarian strategy to not be taking a rookie, you know? I mean, look at all the rookies that paid off this year with hitting Kareem Hunt, you know, Christian McCaffrey, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that from this podcast, you'll generally see that Ryan and I slant more towards the youth than you do, and you slant more toward the veterans. Just to hit on my early round strategy, I like what I'm guessing Ryan will say. I hit on the young wide receivers early and often, and I think that, you know, just generally coming into 2018, this is actually one of the worst years possible for, you know, looking in at that first round of the wide receivers. You know, there's not too many of them that are still looking, you know, at the beginning of their prime or entering their prime soon. Guys like Michael Thomas, Mike Evans, DeAndre Hopkins, they're in there, but so are the A.J. Greens and the Julios who are kind of exiting their primes right now, the guys that you'd be looking at more in that late first, early second, I'm guessing, Jacob. So, Ryan, what is your early round strategy for Dynasty?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Jacob as far as what he said about trading down. I'm happy to trade down really at all points of the draft if I can acquire some extra picks in those sweet spots, whatever I might have identified as a sweet spot based on ADP and things like that, or if I can just acquire future first rounders. But other than that, I pretty much disagree with Jacob on everything. He knows that, though. I like to build my teams, Nathan, like you do, around wide receivers and around youth in general. I do feel like I'm kind of adjusting a little bit, not only to the running back kind of changes that we've seen this year, but being open to relying more on veteran players, even if they might only have a few years left in their career. But especially in those early rounds, I'm still taking younger players and probably not going to take a player who may only have a couple of years left.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article for DLF a few years ago about winning in year one, where I'll hammer the youth early, you know, rounds 1 to 10, where the premium assets are being spent. And year in and year out, there are the Frank Gores of the world, the Andre Johnsons a few years ago, guys being picked in like 11th, like 16th round range, where I think that you can legitimately build like, you know, some wide receiver twos, wide receiver threes out of just guys that are being, you know, passed. Larry Fitzgerald's been passed off as old for 3 or 4 years now, and he's being selected probably in that 9th, 10th round range of startups at some point. So I think that there's ways to spend the premium assets on the youth while, you know, building with the age elsewhere. But I do think that there is a benefit to, if you want to just stack your team with the veterans and get like AJ Green and Julio Jones, that's certainly not a bad way to start a startup. All right, let's move on to, you talked a little bit about trading down. This kind of fits in with that a bit. And this is more, maybe more of an auction question, which I know you do a lot of, Ryan. And that's depth versus studs and duds. I feel obviously a lot of this can be impacted by how many roster requirements, how many starters you have, and how many roster spots there are in the league. But do you have any opposition to going like a team full of depth or vice versa with a studs and duds approach?
No, and you mentioned kind of my move to auction leagues, and that really is what has kind of changed my mindset on veteran players in general. You know, I wrote The Productive Struggle a few years ago, and that's exactly the strategy that I used when I was doing startup drafts 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, basically punting year one, getting as many young players and future draft picks as I could. And that worked. I built some good teams out of that, even though they did struggle that first year. But in an auction, and even in some cases in startup drafts, there's really no reason to do that. The veterans are so cheap. You mentioned guys like Fitzgerald, but I mean, there's almost an endless supply of these veterans that you can grab. And there's almost no reason to punt, even though that kind of became my trademark for a while.
Yeah. And if I may, Ryan, I think your brand's on point, because I've been in a lot of these startup drafts where half the league is punting year one, and it makes it pretty easy to kind of capitalize their strategy. Have you seen this before, leagues where you get half of the league that are all vying on the same?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it does seem like it's become more and more popular. I know Scott Fish has talked about this as well, that productive struggle or punting year one is something he used to employ as well. And because so many people have decided to try that strategy, and it's become, I guess, so popular to load up on those young players thinking they are all going to hit, which we know in reality won't be the case. It does make it easy if you're willing to, I don't even want to say give up on the long-term future, because you still have future rookie picks. You have chances to add youth to your team, but if you're willing to fill your team with those veterans that other people are casting off, then you can win that first year and pay your dues for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. One of the things that as I try and defend the youth approach, the productive struggle, all those things, I've often heard people say winning in year one is the easiest year to win because all these people punt in the startup draft. And I think that that's a bit of a flawed concept, because I think no matter what year it is, whether it's year one, two, three, or four, there's basically a section of teams that aren't going to be competing, whether it's because they punted year one or they're in extreme rebuilds because they took over an orphan, or they just had a couple of bad years of drafting. And so I think that roughly there's 3 to 4 teams every year, whether it's year one of teams punting or in the future, that those 3 to 4 teams don't have a shot. Maybe that there's a one or two more that like are maybe strategizing towards the future more so than the present. But I think that number of 3 to 4 in a 12-team league, maybe 5 to 6 in a 16-teamer, I think that's the number that it hovers around, whether it's year one or in the future. What are your thoughts on that, Jacob?
I mean, I always play to win. It's always my strategy. Like this, I just cannot fathom, you know, tanking and trying losing to make your team better. Just maybe it's just the competitive side of me. But I hear what you're saying. I've had a couple teams that just crushed the first couple of years, dragon. And so I'm trying to find ways to build that, or, you know, build up these teams that were once juggernauts. Teams heavy wide receiver also, and trying to just pick dominant players. So I would go with a Gronk or a Graham early, and Drew Brees, I was often picking in like the 4th, 5th round where I could, just so I could have, you know, guys at those dominant positions. And it worked really well. I mean, I had some great teams during the regular season, but then I've kind of reevaluated my strategy lately, because most of these leagues, they're head to head and you have 2 weeks basically for the playoffs and 2 weeks. And you can have just mediocre teams win the playoffs. And so I had a 12-1 team that finished second. And then that same team went 11-2 and finished second again. So we kind of talked about this, Skull. I'm starting to look at who are those players that I could add to my roster that can explode, you know, in a 2 week playoff. And it's those running backs. I mean, we saw what Todd Gurley just did, over this year's playoffs. And then the year before, David Johnson did that. So how do you guys feel about that, where you need to have one or two guys that's capable of just winning you a 2 week playoff?
I think that's a fair point for sure. But the challenge, of course, is identifying who those players are. And guys that you mentioned, Gurley and David Johnson.
Le'Veon, you know, I would put in that bracket.
Right. I mean, those are lead backs that are going to be, I mean, not only lead backs for their own team, but some of the highest valued players in dynasty. So, I mean, it's going to take, it would take a lot just to go out and acquire those guys. and their price is, in Gurley's case, higher than it's ever been. So I don't know. Maybe that's one of those things that's easier said than done. But I do think you make a good point as far as looking to the playoffs and making sure you're prepared for that part of the season.
Yep, playoffs are always definitely a big part of it. And I think that is definitely something that when people talk about, oh, sneaking in the playoffs, you know, can get you a championship, and that's certainly the case in some circumstances. So definitely would be, you know, a case for, okay, you know, you don't necessarily have to go all win now to win a championship year one. You can try and sneak into the playoffs with a bit of more of a mixed team. So one thing I want to talk about that I know a lot of people wanted to hear us talk about is trading future first during the startup, or trading for them, or trading them away. I guess I'll give both sides the argument here because I think I know who's on which side. But Jacob, your future first, what are you looking to do? Are you looking to like trade up from like the 208 and the startups, like the 112? Are you looking to just acquire like a fifth round pick? What are you looking to do if you're trying to trade your first round startup pick? I mean, first round rookie pick in the following season.
I mean, in a perfect world, I get, you know, one of those earlier picks, like a second, third, fourth rounder, but that's not always the case. And I think round startup picks are, you can usually get for a first round. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong there, guys. But from my experience that that's still decent to get out of a player that you don't know. One, you don't know what spot that the draft spot that's going to be. And two, you don't know if that you're going to hit on that player. So I actually did that in a league that you and I are in, Nathan, where I traded a sixth round pick, and I traded my first round pick, which ended up being the 112. And I traded that pick for Mark Ingram. So, you know, I don't have any regrets about that now, but, you know, we'll see come next year when he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. So yeah, ideally the more you can get, the better, but I think fifth, sixth is kind of where it's at. It just depends on the draft class. I last year, you could have got a lot more because people were pretty hyped up for that class.
Yeah, there's a bit of a high variance in trading future first in general, but definitely in the startup when it's, you know, a team has only picked three or four players, and like, well, is this guy going to go all win out and it's going to be the 112? Is this team going to get some injury, get the 102? You know, so it's in trading them away. And there's also a risk in trading for them. If you think that one's going to be early, it could end up being not. Or, you know, if you think, oh, this might be a late one, and then you can end up being rewarded with a higher one as well. So, Ryan, what is your strategy involving future first in a startup?
Yeah, I think what you mentioned there, Nathan, trying to kind of project how the other teams are going to end up, even with just a few players on your team, that's where it helps to really know your competition. If I'm playing against Jacob, obviously he's not guaranteed of any success in a season, but I know he's going to go all in. I know he's going to focus on building his team around those veterans, and he has a good chance at the very least of making the playoffs. So when I acquire his future first, I know there's a decent chance it's going to be later in that first round. So that's something to kind of keep in mind, I guess. But my personal strategy is I rarely trade away future first, whether it's during the startup or really at any point in the year. I just feel like those picks gain value throughout the year. The closer we get to the draft, the more valuable they're worth. And I would rather not give up that value gain, and not even talking about a specific player with that pick, but just the value gain that they're going to have as the rookie draft gets closer. I'd rather not give that up to move up a little bit, or to or even for like a fifth or sixth round pick, like Jacob mentioned.
Yeah, and this actually maybe a little sidebar to that conversation. I found myself a little bit more reckless with my future first and future picks in general and Debbie leagues, because the rookie options or rookie drafts are so diluted that I'm like, oh, I'll just trade this pick. And yes, if it ends up being late, then especially in like a rookie draft type format, then usually it doesn't end up being higher. You know, picks in a normal, you know, Debbie draft, Debbie league rookie draft, they can end up being at, are you a little bit more loose with your rookie first in Debbie leagues, or you still hold this tight as well?
No, I agree with you. In a Devy league where the rookie draft is watered down a little bit with the loss of some of those top players from previous years already rostered, then yeah, I'm more willing to trade those rookie picks in that format. And if it's a rookie auction like we use in the kitchen sink leagues, then I'm even more willing because I know it's not a set pick, but it's just an amount of money that can be bundled with other picks and other money. So definitely more willing. And that's actually, I think one of the kitchen sink leagues is the only league where I have traded my future first currently.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. So we've kind of talked about a variety of strategy stuff. Let's get into more positions. Drafting Drew Brees in a draft a few years ago. Are you generally targeting those older quarterbacks? Are you generally targeting those older quarterbacks, thinking that people are dismissing them too early? I mean, people were dismissing Tom Brady like 6 years ago, and you know, look what he's still doing.
Yeah, I think right now we're kind of in a weird period with quarterbacks because you got all these great guys retiring, and there's not a lot of up and comers behind them. And you can tell just by looking at the wide receivers this year. I tweeted this out, but 2017 only had three, and that's kind of scary stat because 2015 we had 10 plus pass catchers. So I feel like there's a big hole right now at quarterback, and generally I'll probably punt the position because I don't think that there's that many elite guys going right now. I mean, I love Andrew Luck, but his health status is up in the air. So, you know, outside of Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, I don't know if I'm going to reach on a quarterback just because that the position is kind of in flux. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, we just see so many quarterbacks, kind of like you mentioned, that are at that 35, 36, 37 years or older. And I mean, we've heard Big Ben talk about retirement. Nathan, you mentioned Tom Brady. People were trading him away almost 10 years ago because he was quote unquote getting old. And here he is still playing like a quarterback one in fantasy and leading his team to a Super Bowl. So, but over the next couple of years, we're going to see Brady and Breeze and Ben and Rivers and Eli. We're going to see all these guys retire, and it's going to have a big effect, not only on the quarterback landscape, but like Jacob mentioned, on the wide receivers as well.
Yeah, in the one quarterback format, we pretty much talked about on the show how basically every starting quarterback that's like any good is worth it. And so it just kind of ranges from like that based on how good the quarterback is. And I'm perfectly fine investing, you know, like a late second round pick in one of these older quarterbacks writing off and pairing him, younger guy, pairing him with a Deshaun Watson. He would obviously be a little more expensive, more in that early second range. But if you get a guy like Watson or a guy like Garoppolo, I know people are going crazy over him, but, you know, quarterbacks have this longevity that if he looks like he's going to hit, then you're going to have a quarterback for years, even if that's crazy window even be talking about. Sounds like easier than a guy like Brady or a Breeze with a Garoppolo or a Watson would be the move I'm trying to make if I'm in a one quarterback startup right now. And Superflex, the value of years involved with a quarterback is so much higher that I do tend to avoid the older quarterbacks because they're still being valued as quarterbacks that are highly valued in Superflex, but I'm like, okay, how many more years is this guy going to give me? And a year of quarterback Superflex production is so much more valuable than a year of one quarterback production. So how do you differentiate the two? I'm not sure. Do you play? Oh, you play in the Superflex with Emphasis on Runs too. Jake, how do you differentiate quarterback values between one and two quarterback and Dynasty?
A lot of success and the super flex by just taking some more a bunch of mid-tier guys rather than reaching early. That's been my, you know, model that's worked. So I've done that, but the quarterback's just, it's a weird spot right now. And I know people are flipping for Wentz and Deshaun Watson, but I was just looking at touchdown percentage rate recently and I had a 7.5 touchdown percentage rate. That's really hard to sustain. And when you compare that to Drew Brees, who never had it over seven, I don't know if he's able to, he's going to keep that going. He's going to be a top three quarterback, isn't he, this year?
Yeah, what Wentz is QB1 right now, right, Ryan?
Yeah, Wentz is, according to our ADP at DLF, Wentz is actually the quarterback one right now.
Yeah, I feel like Dynasty has kind of been all over the map with ranking quarterbacks. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Ryan Tannehill was a top 10 Dynasty quarterback, and, you know, Blake Bortles might have been a year ago, you know, after he threw his 37 touchdowns. So I think I'll just kind of hang back and, you know, maybe get lucky and get a Matt Stafford, who's pretty solid, you know, in those mid rounds, rather than reaching early on a quarterback.
All right. We've talked a little bit quarterback. Now let's go to the other onesie position, tight end. For years, it's been, oh, Gronk or punt, Gronk or wait until the 10th or 12th round. Are we continuing to ride the Gronk or punt? Are we adding Gronk and Kelsey or punt? What is your 2018? Does it reflect your future and past strategies at tight end? We can start with Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's Gronk. And if you're just looking from a value perspective, well, that's not fair to say. From both value and production, I think we have to lump Kelsey in there. And Kelsey's been the tight end one for the past 2 years. We know part of that at least has to do with Gronk injuries. But Kelsey's also gaining on him in ADP as well. So I think it's Gronk or Kelsey. Or punt, if you want to say, or wait on tight end. And I'm personally going to be one of those that waits unless one of those guys falls to the late third round range.
Yeah. In the past, I've been one to reach for a Gronk or Graham because they were just so dominant. But again, I think this position is kind of in flux too. We got a lot of young guys coming with Njoku, Howard, and Evan Engram. But there's going to be some real value with like the Greg Olsons and Delaney Walkers. So I just grab them out.
Okay. Let's move on to a little bit more of a broad conversation again. When to buy a young stud? And we'll start with Jacob here. So when do you finally bite the bullet? I know that you love your veterans. You love your guys that are putting up production in the later years. When do you say, dang it, I just need to go and pay up for OBJ? Or dang it, I just need to go and pay up for, you know, whoever the next big stud is.
Is this in a startup?
Let's say it's in the offseason after your startup.
I mean, obviously you want as many of those guys as you can. I've always had like an escalating arc with my receivers. And so I've taken advantage of the Larry Fitzgeralds and Jordy Nelsons and Brandon Marshalls, and they kind of planned on having guys to back them up. So I'll take some flyers on some younger guys and kind of take advantage of that incubation period, if you will, which we just saw with like and Nelson Aguilar seems like he's starting to come out too. So I think you constantly got to be harvesting that. But if you're doing a startup, you're taking OBJ, Evans, even Cooper. I think Cooper's probably undervalued right now. He just had so a couple, but I think you just need to balance your team with a mix of guys that are all kind of performing at the same time. So it's okay to have a T.Y. Hilton mixed in with a DT, you know, some of those younger guys waiting in the wings.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ryan?
I was just – you know, I mean, Jacob, because we do, I guess because we disagree on strategy so much, I love kind of picking your brain and seeing how you think on this stuff. And I mean, I'm just thinking if we're both drafting and we're in the second round and I take Corey Davis and you take Doug Baldwin and they both in 2018 produce the same kind of numbers, I mean, we both know what's going to happen with the value there, right? Like Doug Baldwin is going to maintain or lose value, and Corey Davis is right. Going to be a first rounder next year, right? And
yeah, so, I yeah, mean, how, I'm following you.
I guess how much do you factor in future value when you're building a team?
I mean, I guess Doug Baldwin wouldn't be enough for me. I'd more look at like an AJ Green. I don't even know if he's a second round pick right now.
Yeah, he's a second rounder.
That would be more the caliber that I would want. I'm planning that he's going to fall off a cliff by probably age 32. And if you look at that article I mentioned earlier, the Chasing the Top 24, I went through and I cataloged the age 30 elite players and what they did. And a lot of them are still getting it done. And so it's really just about until they're done. And maybe he's just on Marshall. He might finally be done. But his age 32 year was a top five season. So to get that, if I can still get top five, top 10, and I think Julio Jones is still going to produce like that for the next couple of years, because my chances of winning the league, especially early on, are pretty big. And if I do win the league, I'm going to pay my entrance fee for, how many years? 4 or 5 years? Look at it. But you always got to plan for it. They're going to hit the wall eventually. But yeah, the one sense. Big – the biggest flaw in the dynasty community makes, and we get all of these wide receiver prospects, and the problem is Larry Fitzgerald is still there, still taking up that top spot. Golden Tate was a wide receiver 12 this year. So these older receivers are still taking those top slots, and it leaves those younger guys never get there, So in that article I mentioned earlier, Chasing the Top 24, I went back to 2000, and 62 receivers had three or more top 24 seasons, and they were responsible for of all the top 24 seasons. So I think if you can build a team with a lot of those guys – and you can get, 3 to 5 top 24 years out of them, you're going to be winning in the long run. The key is obviously catching those guys at the right time. But when you got guys like Doug Baldwin, and, is Doug Baldwin a second-round pick, or is he like a third-round pick?
Yeah, he's probably in that third-round range now. But, yeah, he's been a second-round pick this over the past year.
I mean, he wouldn't be a kind of guy I would go after. I think there's some value of some other similar players probably in the third or fourth round, and maybe I can take a Diggs in the second.
Yeah, Jacob. I guess Ryan. Jacob hates the Seahawks, so that's why he's hesitant on Baldwin.
Yeah. I mean, we're gonna go from Bevel to Brian Schottenheimer. I mean, how awful is that?
Yeah.
When I do these top 24 and you look at it from a big lens, the guys that are consistently there, the ones that are getting 120 plus targets, and how many times a Seahawks receiver has had 120 plus targets? Once. That's it. In the Pete Carroll era, that's terrible. Now they've been able to overcome that because efficient, but I really want those wide receivers on teams where they're going to get peppered and they're with targets and they're going to get more than just 7 targets a game. They're getting 8 to 10, because those are the guys that are more likely to continue to hit those top spots.
Yeah. Just as Ryan mentioned earlier, buying the Corey Davises of the world in the second round of startup can certainly, you can profit a lot 12 months from now, or you can end up bottoming out like a Treadwell or a player like that. But now I want to talk about the veterans. When to sell an aging veteran. People often talk about, is this the year we got to sell Julio? Is this year we got to sell AJ Green? Because there is a bit of a curve of when to sell them. And then in like 2 years later, when they're the 31-year-old who becomes the Larry Fitzgerald, when is he going to retire? When is he going to fall off that cliff? Especially with the concerns of Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson retiring at age 30, 31, whatever he was. This big like cloud over all of their veteran wide receivers. Who's going to be the next elite wide receiver to be the next Calvin Johnson that retires? So, Ryan, how do you maneuver that window of selling the stud wide receiver and then trying to buy them back later?
Yeah, it's become so hard, and it goes back to that productive struggle. Everybody wanting to have, the prettiest roster or the coolest team or whatever you want to say, but. I mean, and it comes down to it. It also depends on when you're saying sell these veterans. It depends on, I guess, what point of view you're coming from with that. Like, if you're talking about selling them as elite assets, it might already be too late on Julio, which is just crazy. I saw a trade today where he was traded even up for the 1.06 rookie pick. Which, I mean, I really, really hope that that's an extreme example. I hope that's not a trade we're seeing a lot of, but that is a legit trade that went down this week. So, and if that's even close to representative of the value he's carrying now, then yeah, it's too late, even though he's still a first round startup pick. I think the move I would try to make, and honestly, I probably will try to make, is to pivot from a guy like Julio or Green or even Antonio Brown to a younger player who is already producing at or close to that level. So for me, that's Michael Thomas or Davante Adams or, you know, Mike Evans, if depending on which of those players you're moving.
Yeah, and from my experience, you know, as a Larry Fitzgerald owner that suffered through a couple tough years, and even when he had a down year, you know, it just didn't make sense to me to trade him away for a second. That, you know, from my research, you know, second round picks are like 30% hit rate, and most of the time they're not going to hit in year one anyway. So you're going to have to wait a couple years. So it was better. I could have Jordy Nelson on a couple teams. I'm going to hold on to him just for the off chance that he returns. Rather than trade for a random second that turns into McNichols or, you know, Zay Jones, Farrell Cooper. You know what I'm saying? So from my experience, like on an elite guy like that, I'm just going to hold on to him until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, that can definitely be the safer approach rather than, you know, trying to buy and sell it at the times. All right, guys, this has been a lot of fun. Just want to kind of just give you guys the floor. Is there anything else startup-wise that you want to get some takes out on?
I'll go first, sorry. so I was thinking, Nathan, this is probably the worst episode you could have invited me to join in on because, and I've mentioned this to Jacob on Twitter recently, for years and years before I was even doing any kind of fantasy football writing, I would follow Sigmund Bloom's work, and if any of your listeners do that, hopefully they do. You've seen Sigmund say, just pick the right players. Just pick the right players, and
good idea.
You know, that's how I reacted for years and years, is just laughed, and honestly, I wasn't even sure if he was serious. But that's kind of the point I'm at. I think if you really just like to build your team around young players and stack up draft picks like I do and Nathan, like you do, that's fine. And that can work if you pick the right players. And if you'd rather take fewer risk and build your teams around veterans that you know their track record and you expect them to continue that, and that's kind of what Jacob does, that's fine too. Just pick the right players. And if you do, that strategy will work. So I'm almost at the point where almost any strategy is going to work if you get lucky and get those right players.
Just score points, right? It's that easy.
That's right.
So I make this grid and it has the top 12 scorers, and it, you know, it's over a decade long, and it's pinned to my top of my Twitter account if you want to look at it. But I think it's really interesting to just kind of look at it like that and how kind of evolved, you know, and you can see where it became more of a passing league. You know, all these wide receivers are in blue, and you know, they're dominating all those top spots, and the last 2 years have kind of changed a little bit. We've seen that running back of resurgence. So, you know, kind of like in the early 2000s, you know, when I was playing fantasy back then, it was all running back. And if you didn't have those top running backs, you were screwed. Standard scoring, because if you had like a 10th or 11th round pick in the first round, you were picking like the 10th running back and you weren't going to win. You know, so it's why it was horrible. And that's why I went to PPR, because at least in PPR, those wide receivers can still get you those top, you know, scores. Because the way it's structured. But, you know, look at this grid and we got to kind of predict and like what's going to happen with the NFL. And are we seeing a departure from Peyton Manning? If I could just eulogize Peyton Manning really quick. He had 13 seasons. He had at least one pass catcher with 10 plus touchdowns, and four seasons he had 10 plus touchdowns. We're missing him right now. You know, that's a big piece of what's missing, because we lost Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, maybe we're in a downshift and you kind of wiggle and mix your teams of a mix of running backs and wide receivers. And that's kind of how I'm leaning, is chasing that. I think running back receptions have arrived, and you see that through the numbers. You know, there was more running back receptions than we've seen in a long time. So getting those workhorse running backs is going to be important to winning leagues. You know, having those David Johnson, you know, girly type players, and we have LaDainian Tomlinson coming in the league with Saquon Barkley. I have the 101 in one league, and I got offered Julio Jones straight up, and I passed. And that's something I wouldn't have done. I think to have one of those guys is big, and you want one of those top tier guys that's going to perform for 3 years. If you look at Le'Veon Bell, he's been in the top six scoring every year he's healthy. So as many as, to your point, Ryan, just pick the right guys, right?
Yeah, I think that a big part of the shift to running back, at least in Dynasty, is that not only are we seeing running backs score in bunches these 25, 30-point games, but these guys are all 24, 25 years old at the most. You know, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, and, you know, you got Saquon Barkley coming in, Darius Geis. All these young running backs are so good, and they're the ones scoring the most points. It's not like there's, you know, DeMarco Murray's who are like 30, 31 years old putting up the points. These are all young studs that, you know, yes, running backs have more of a limited window, but all these guys have, you know, 4 to 5 year windows of, unless they have a major injury, they're all going to be putting up points for a long time. So I'm still going to lean on wide receiver, but I do think that there is a benefit to going young running back early on in the startup.
I am too. I still think wide receiver, it is a passing league, and we'll see a bounce back at some point. But, you know, you definitely got to wiggle to what's happening out there.
Well, and the thing that's been trendy for so many years now is to build around wide receivers. Whether they were younger or older, didn't matter. But your first two or three rounds were filled with wideouts. You would see out of the first 24 picks in the top two rounds, you'd see 18 wide receivers coming off the board. So the good thing for us who do like to build around receivers still is that a lot of those players, especially those second rounders, are going to get pushed down because of this influx of running backs. So a player that you might have taken in the second round a year ago is going to be a third rounder, even a fourth rounder this offseason. So you can still grab a running back in the first couple of rounds, which is something we might not have done recently, and still get those wide receivers in the third, fourth, fifth.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but I think Allen Robinson might like slide to like the early third round of startups. And if so, that is the absolute biggest buy in all the early startup rounds, if you ask me.
Yep, that's about his range right now. I think his ADP is 25.
I'm totally with on that one, especially if he ends up going to San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. And you look at Shanahan's resume, man. I mean, Andre Johnson, Julio Jones, Pierre Garcon, it doesn't matter. He's hucking it a ton to those guys. And speaking of that, Todd Haley it was official today. He just moved to Cleveland. I am a huge Todd Haley fan. And I have him for a while. It's like where he goes. Big numbers. You know, when he was in Arizona, Larry Fitzgerald had his two biggest statistical seasons. And then he went to Kansas City, and Dwayne Bowe had a 15-touchdown year there. And we also saw Jamal Charles blow up. And then, of course, we know what happened in Pittsburgh. Now he's had talented players. You know, he's had one of the greatest running backs and wide receivers in Pittsburgh. D'Angelo Williams' career resurrected at age 32 with Todd Haley calling the shots. So buying some Cleveland players, and I can't say I've said that in the past. What's your gut take on this Haley move?
I've been all over the Browns since the Sashi thing, along with the rest of the team, Rotoviz. Unfortunately, Sashi's gone, but he left a bunch of talented players behind him with Corey Coleman, David Njoku. And then all the picks that they're going to have this year. So hopefully they invest in a Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold and not Josh Allen.
Yeah, I actually just finished an article, which was just kind of a different view or a different way to use ADP. But I basically looked at the ADP of each team, looking at the top value quarterback, running back, the top two wide receivers, tight end, and one flex spot. So just the next highest. And the Browns, you know, you might think that they were pretty far down that list, but they were in the top third. DeShone Kizer was not valued at all. He wasn't drafted at all in our recent ADP, but outside of that quarterback spot, they had Duke Johnson and Crowell, and of course the receivers, Gordon and Corey Coleman, and then David Njoku. All of those guys were top 100 players. So I think there were only three NFL teams that had five players in the top 100, and the Browns were one of them.
Wow. And that's before the Haley news. I mean, we talked about, I think you tweeted this out, a poll on what happens if Barkley goes to Cleveland. You know, is he still, and with Todd Haley there, he sure as hell is for me, because there's a very good chance they're going to be throwing it, targeting him, you know, 100 times like they did with Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I got a lot of interesting responses to that poll. It ended up, I think the number it ended up was 78% still said they would take Barkley if he won a 1.01 if he landed in Cleveland. But a lot of the responses were pointing out the success of Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell over the past couple of seasons, and talking about the Browns offensive line, which is pretty solid. But all that withstanding, you know, I don't know. You just have to, it almost seems like the Browns are cursed, but yeah, I like the Haley move. And if they do add Barkley, wow, that's a lot of talent. I guess my only point to you was, we all like to knock the Browns sometimes, but in Dynasty, at least, a lot of their players are not that cheap. It's not going to be easy to acquire those guys.
Right. And it's going to get even crazier if they sign Kirk Cousins or, I mean, even Alex Smith would be kind of interesting there, coming off a career year. I mean, who knew the guy could have a career year and he's going to end up on a new team next year. So wait, Nathan, what's your thing? Do you weigh that into your evaluation at all? I know people are talent percent, and there are people like me who value play calling more sometimes.
I'm certainly more on the talent perspective, because I think that a lot of it can be attributed to, when you talk about Kyle Shanahan's this great play caller because he had Julio Jones. So I mean, it's kind of hard to screw up having Julio Jones, but maybe Steve Sarkisian did that. So I think that some of that analysis I think can be off, you know, no disrespect to your analysis, of course, but I do tend to, you know, go towards the talent. I think that just because I think an offensive coordinator may be subpar, like Norv Turner, for example, just because a lot of people don't like Norv Turner, because he's, you know, done a little with a lot of talent at certain times. Josh Gordon, obviously, he had his career year with Norv Turner, I'm pretty sure. But
yeah, he did.
People are talking about the Panthers and with Norv Turner, that being a suboptimal situation with there's no creativity for McCaffrey. Or even Cam. So, I mean, I still love pretty much all the Panthers, Funchess, Cam, and McCaffrey, and Norv Turner, who's don't like as an offense coordinator, that's going to determine. It depends on the player, but if I like the player and a suboptimal play caller goes there, I'm not going to really change my mind about it.
Are you the same, Ryan?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's not the top, you know, it's not the top of my list when considering player value, but it's something to consider, especially guys like Shanahan who we have seen just have such a dramatic effect on their players when they've gone from team to team. And I think that's really where we can see some trends, is if they've had success with multiple teams, multiple levels of talent, you know, like you kind of pointed out with Haley, then we really see some trends, and we can kind of bank on those.
All righty. I think that'll wrap us up. A lot of interesting talk here on the Dynasty Tradecast with Jacob Rickroad from RotoViz, Ryan McDowell from Roto World, and DLF. Do you guys have anything to plug before we head out?
No, I'm good. I don't want to extend the show by 15 minutes or anything.
I'm good too. So please, somebody plug something. I got nothing.
All right. Well, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to the Dynasty Tradecast and on RotoViz Radio, where there's so much great content on RotoViz Radio. So many great guests that come on throughout the off season. Make sure you're subscribed to the to our channel, to the RotoViz Radio channel. Rate and review. I'm sure there's plenty of contests that'll be happening on both sides of that throughout the off season. So have some fun with that as well. So thanks so much for listening, guys. And hopefully I have my co-host back next week, because you guys were great, but I missed my boys.
Thanks for having me, Nathan.
Yep. Yeah, thanks so much, Nathan. It was a lot of fun.